Dear divorce, it has been 6.5 years since you came barreling through my life like a hurricane full of rage, almost destroying me in the process. I have spent over 6 years restoring and rebuilding what you have destroyed and can honestly say that I am ready to live my life again. It is time that I let the scars heal and the memories fade so that I can make new ones as I move forward. I would never wish this journey on any other woman, but I am stronger and bolder for what I have gone through, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. My life will forever be changed.
We entered the house together, hand in hand. A whiff of freshly painted walls hits us. The wooden flooring is exactly how we like it. Oak. We picked it together. The island is wide and glossy. The indestructible quartz, as they call it. Is it really indestructible? Specks of diamond shining bright. Just like the two of us. Give it 2 weeks. This place will look like home. As long as you're next to me. Right? Right? I turn around. A loud thud. I can't feel your hand anymore. But wait. The walls are turning vanilla. What happened to the eggshell shade? There's too much echo. Why is all the furniture disappearing? Where's the beautiful fruit basket? Your keys. They're on the counter. And there's a note right next to it. Hello? No one's home. After 36 years, you left. You're gone. Our marriage is smoke. Research published in the Journal of Men's Health found that divorced people, both men and women, years after their divorce, suffer high rates of mortality, depression, illness in general, and substance abuse than do married people. No two people experience divorce the same way, but most can agree that it's an extremely painful and difficult situation, both mentally and physically. Here's what no one tells you about divorce. No one tells you divorce makes you an outcast, an outsider, a castaway. No one tells you people really do take sides. No one tells you how to learn to get over it, how to sit with your grief. No one tells you how to move forward, pick up your life, and redefine every part of who you are and what you want or need. No one tells you you don't know who your true friends are until you go through a divorce. No one tells you that mere acquaintances will become your most valued and loyal friends. No one tells you that you will discover broken parts of yourself you didn't even know existed. No one tells you that although you think you can't cry anymore, you will cry some more. No one tells you that your heart can and will love again. And the list goes on. Today's episode of the Lavender Fix podcast features Connie Imhoff, a sexy Texas-based entrepreneur and a personal coach helping women heal from heartbreak and trauma. Connie has been on quite a journey since 2016, the year her marriage of 36 years came to a screeching halt after her husband told her he did not love her anymore, out of the blue. Goes without saying that she was blindsided beyond words. The next 2 years, they were grotesque. How did Connie process this news? What led to the divorce? How did her kids react? and how did she finally come out of the darkness? Today's episode is all about Connie's display of uncommon resilience and perseverance. Hi, Connie. Welcome to the Lavender Fix podcast.
Hi, Sabrine. I am so happy to be here. I've been excited about this for over a week now, and I appreciate you bringing me on. I'm ready.
No, thank you. I mean, Connie, I know it's not easy to revisit a lot of what happened. This is 36 years of your marriage we're talking about. And as someone who recently went through a big life event myself, I have a lump in my throat. And this topic of divorce is very close to my heart. And I know that there are many, many women out there, or even men, you know, who grapple with not knowing what to do with their feelings. They don't have the right community. They don't have the right tools. So today's episode is probably going to be one of the longest ever across all three seasons. And I think I'm looking for answers for myself, not just our listeners. So I think that should tell you a lot about how important this topic is.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, Connie, let's just start with who was Connie before she got married?
I was very young when I got married, but I was just a go-getter. I had big dreams. I was just always the optimist and always the one that went after the bullies. You know, I just... Mm-hmm. Couldn't handle anyone being the underdog. And, you know, that's pretty much who I was. I was a flute player. I was big in music and just ready to grab life by the tail. And then met my husband when I was 16. And then we married when I was 18. So I was very young.
You were very young. Yeah.
Very young. He was 21.
Uh-huh. Okay, so not a huge age gap, but still, you both were very young.
Yes, we were young.
And what was your favorite part about your husband and your marriage overall?
My favorite part was, I mean, I love being married. Being married was something that I had talked to my mom about in my teenage years growing up. Marriage was something that I looked forward to. I had a great model with my mom and my dad and some of my family, you know, so I loved just being married. And the favorite part of my husband was he seemed to get me. He knew who I was. He just complimented who I was. And that was really how I felt about him.
So when do you think that, you know, things started to go south in your marriage?
I think after we started having children, and that was only 5 years into our marriage. But I can't say that he wasn't ready to be a father, but we did want children. But things started going south, you know, once we had our first child, then our second, then our third, and it just never was the same after that. He just kind of withdrew some in our marriage.
So would you say that your marriage thereafter was always tumultuous?
No, not like really rocky and always hard and bad. No, we had some good times. We had some great vacations and times throughout the whole marriage. But it wasn't like it was when the first 5 years. It was, you know, we woke up and realized that we were adults and real people and had real problems, and I don't think we clinged on to each other as much as we should have.
I mean, I've noticed that one of the biggest reasons marriages fall apart is because of lack of emotional intimacy. And if emotional intimacy is lacking from one or both of you, you know, you may feel lack of safety, love, support, overall connection. And it almost most likely affects physical intimacy in romantic relationships. I mean, I firsthand know people who have great physical intimacy, but they also cheat. And sometimes you wonder, well, if physical intimacy is what binds two people together, then why are people, why is there infidelity? So do you agree with the emotional intimacy piece of it?
Oh, definitely. I think once the emotional connection begins to deteriorate from abuse, neglect, just calling names, belittling, all of those things, once that starts to go, the physical intimacy, you know, can keep going some. Mm. It's not hard to be physically intimate, but it doesn't, the connection starts to sever really quick. And that's what happened in our marriage.
And if you were to, in a line, kind of describe what is, you know, emotional intimacy, what would you say?
What was mine?
What, like, how would you define emotional intimacy?
Okay. Well, it's being present. It's almost sometimes knowing what the other person needs and wants. And that's not going to happen all the time. Mm. But knowing, you know, when they're feeling bad, just being present in the life of your partner to know, you know, they're not mind readers, but it's obvious when your partner's going through something and struggling. And instead of turning that off and not wanting to get involved in it, you have to stay connected with that. And it gets messy and chaotic, but it is required. Mm. It, otherwise, it dies quickly.
You know, it's interesting you said presence, because I'm not sure if you heard of Jay Shetty, who was,
so
a monk who now has his own podcast called On Purpose. And I think it was one of those mini segments on his Instagram where he talked about energy, giving someone your energy, time, presence. Giving someone your time could be sitting right next to someone for 4 hours while you're scrolling through your phone. And that is really not time spent well together. But when you give someone your presence, where you're actively interacting with them, talking to them, asking about their life, and, you know, exchanging notes or whatever, like experiences, really talking through things, that is spending time together, you know?
Exactly.
And I think in this age and time, people go on vacations and they do all sorts of things and they get absorbed in social media and uploading things and taking videos, but really they don't spend any time together.
Right.
So it was cool to kind of see that, you know, with your kind of experience, you also felt like that is what emotional intimacy is. Another thing I wanted to get your opinion on, which is a little bit of a pivot from what we're talking about, but still very relevant.
Sure.
What is your opinion on this new concept of open marriages? And are they sustainable? Because a lot of people have a tendency to argue that humans are not naturally supposed to be monogamous. What do you think about all that?
Well, I would struggle to be able to find one that has lasted very long. And of course, I guess somebody can come in and show us differently. But in my experience as just a human of, you know, 60 years old, and watching people in all the years that I've, you know, been in business and, you know, been around, I don't think it can be sustained because, first of all, women are very emotional and women are very attached to their emotions, to everything else that goes on in their life. So once the openness and the getting intimate with other people and showing, I just don't see it. I don't see how it could happen because I think, you know, I really think that you have to connect with that person on an intimate level in every single way, not just emotionally, not just physically, but in your soul, in your spirit, in your mind, everything. And once you have split that between another person or another thing that you enjoy or any of that, I think you're breaking it down. And I think time is going to be against you That's just my opinion.
I just don't understand how people, and I don't know, maybe I may be perceived as judgmental when it comes to something like this, but I think we're all allowed to have our opinions. I just never understand how someone can claim to be in love with another person and be okay with them being intimate with other people. I just don't get it.
You know, and I guess that would be an interesting thing to talk to somebody about, because there has to be something that they're either missing or that they're, you know, maybe they feel like they'll miss out if they don't. Mm. But I don't think it can happen. I would love for someone to show me, you know, a 25-year marriage that has, you know,
this element to it.
Done it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, because I just don't see it. Mm. I just think one of them is going to break down. And me, I think it's the woman that would break down.
Oh my God, 100%. Eventually, you know, if you really love someone, maybe initially you're okay with it, but over the years it wears you out. This just something I wanted to bring up, because I see this happening a lot in this Asian time. So thank you for your answer.
I mean, I'm not an expert at it, but that's my opinion.
So going back to your marriage, can you share the top four words that come to mind to describe your relationship with your ex-husband when you were married?
Yes. Well, adventurous would have been one. And this is the whole 36 years. So obviously the good and the bad will be all in this. It was adventurous. At some points it was very loving.
Take your time.
There's a word I'm looking for, because he never physically abused me or my children. So it wasn't abuse, but there was a lot of neglect. There was a lot of neglect. So, and most of that obviously was emotional. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm going to say hard. Mm-hmm. That's the other word.
Which is like a default. For all marriages.
Because hard just has a lot in it. So when I say hard, there's a lot involved in hard. And I think most people that are married can fill in the blank
to
there.
That. No, I agree.
Tell
me, was there ever a time in these 36 years when you considered leaving or realized that you weren't happy?
Yes, there definitely was.
Oh, wow.
In fact, yes, in 2004, I actually had rented another home, and I was about to leave at that point. That was pretty much when I think we were pretty much done at that point. And no, I was not happy. I was very unhappy. And I realized at that point that I had lost myself. And all of that is not his fault. It's my fault for not keeping together. So I felt like I just needed to, but then it didn't work out and I didn't leave. I stayed, you know, for my children to be okay. So, yes.
So I was actually waiting. My next question was going to be, you know, what kept you going in your marriage before, you know, divorce? Because 2004 was a long time ago and you got divorced in 2016. So between that time, those 12 years, why do you think, aside from your kids, you know, why did you stay for a decade more if you were unhappy?
Well, first of all, I'm a very loyal person, very loyal. And, you know, in his own way, I think he loved me in his own way. And he felt dedicated as well. He's not a terrible man, of course. But the other thing is in 2010, he was diagnosed with leukemia. So I would never have left him during that time. So that was only 6 years later from when I was ready to leave. So I think there just a lot of things happened. We had a child that was having a lot of problems. She was 16. There was just a lot going on in our family, and I just didn't think I was doing the best thing by being alone, taking care of all that. And then when he got sick, it was just, there another was no layer. Question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get to the meat of it, which is,
okay,
how was this, you know, clearly you said that there was a lot of dedication, and I think divorces can be very ruthless in this age and time, whether someone's sick or not. So the fact that you stayed mm-hmm. was the most decent and loving thing to do, really. And it shows that you had overall a good marriage where you, and I think still, Connie, you really are, you, that loyalty hasn't gone. You know, I've heard you talk about your ex-husband during our discovery calls, and you've always sounded very well-meaning.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know that with everything that went down, how was this decision delivered to you? Because you were at the receiving end of this divorce.
Yeah. Well, it was hard. He just came out from his office one morning and took off his ring and said that he didn't want to be married anymore. That's how I was told. So it was difficult.
And it was out of nowhere. Just,
I mean, we knew that, you know, there was a lot over the years, but I didn't, yeah, no, we were looking at having, we were going to possibly, we went and looked to buy a house before that.
Wow.
So it kind of was out of nowhere as far as that decision.
So he just came out, took his ring off, and that's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
And I said, okay, because, I mean, once he had made his mind up, I mean, I had been fighting for so many years to help make our marriage work. And mm-hmm. once he had said that, I just couldn't go any further. I was too dead inside, and I knew that I had nothing left to fight with.
Can you tune into that moment and tell me exactly what you felt the moment those words came out of his mouth?
Shock. Mm-hmm. I looked at him as if, I don't know who you are. It was shock.
Did you?
Because he told me he would never do that.
Oh, he did, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he told me just a couple of years prior to that, that, you know, that he sees his life ending with us together. So
wow,
he reiterated that. Yeah.
Do you feel, what was his expression like when he said this to you?
He had tears in his eyes.
Okay.
He was upset.
So in my head, I thought that he was probably very nonchalant about it.
No, not at all. That's not the kind of man he was.
Uh-huh.
He was upset. I mean, he cared about our family
mm-hmm.
in his own way, even though it may not have been the best way. It was the way that he knew how to care for us. And sometimes I think that he did it to let me find myself again, because he knew I was dying inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly do not make this chivalrous at all, but I think sometimes he knew that I wasn't well with being in the marriage anymore, with the way he chose to love and all that. So
was,
I think
he,
there was more to this.
Was he introverted as a person?
He's not introverted, but he's not an extrovert. So it's
like an ambivert.
I mean, he gets up and plays music in front of people. And, yeah. So
mm-hmm.
he's just kind of a normal guy, you know.
I mean, I am trying to process like how this whole thing must have played out, because I've heard of such stories, but I've never met someone who has actually been through something like that, that their husband walks out their office, takes their ring off and says that they want a divorce. 36 years
yeah.
is an extremely long time. That's like three decades.
Yeah.
So how did
yeah,
you...
I mean, it was hard.
How did you respond to your husband wanting a divorce?
I didn't. I just said, okay, I'm packing up and going to Texas. I didn't respond really any way. I wasn't just, like I said, I wasn't going to fight for it because I had nothing left to fight with. So I just decided this is, I need to go and this is the time.
And so, do you think that he was expecting you to resist in any way?
Knowing who I am, he probably did expect that.
Okay.
But yeah, but there again, like I said, I, you know, I did visit an attorney the next day. So I did take care of making sure that I, you know, didn't get railroaded, but, I knew that I just couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't mm-hmm. fight anymore. So I just let him have it, you know, let him have the divorce.
He didn't try to stop you from moving back to Texas.
Well, he said, you don't have to leave now. And I said, I'm not living in the same house with someone that says that he doesn't want me anymore. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
I mean, I think it is so amazing and daring that you actually left. Because, Connie, you know my story. And you know that yeah. I stayed together in the same apartment. And it wasn't even a house. It was a two-bedroom, 1,100 square feet apartment. And two bedrooms, one small living room, an open kitchen. And it was pretty much a space where you are always in each other's face. And I stayed for a whole year with the same person. Mm-hmm. But I think in my case, I was holding on to hope that things would get better. I just, that, you know, I think of that often, the fact that you just left. Even if there was a part of you that maybe felt like, but why? I think the fact that you took action and you moved back and you went to an attorney and you got things lined up, that is very rare. It's not easy. And I just have so much admiration for you. And just know that this piece of your journey, especially, I think of this very often and it gives me courage.
Well, I mean, I think in the long run, if someone has given up on their marriage and you stay as a matter of begging them to love you, all it does is it tears you down from limb to limb. And I knew that I couldn't do that. And I was not willing to beg because I can honestly say that I did the best I could to make our marriage work. I didn't do everything right, and I had a lot of faults, but I did work very hard at wanting my marriage. So when he said it was over, I was not going to go any further. So let me
ask mm-hmm. you this then. Do you think that if he had asked for a divorce maybe 10 years ago, do you think that your attitude towards it, do you think that it would have been different, your reaction?
10 years ago? I mean, maybe according to the way he delivered it, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were not in the best place. I mean, he had just been sick and the job situation and all that. And then we had to sell our house in Texas to, you know, Intel brought us to California. I probably wouldn't have been too much different because there were signs, even though I didn't know he was wanting a divorce, there were signs that we just were struggling more than we ever had when we moved to California. So it probably would have been the same.
The same. And how were the years preceding him bringing up divorce? Like if you were to probably look at a couple of years, anywhere between 2 to 5 years?
Well, very chaotic. The situation with his present job when he got leukemia, he ended up not having long-term disability because the HR screwed it up. So he was, after 21 years of working for them, he ended up with no long-term disability and he shouldn't have been working. Mm-hmm. Then he got the offer from Intel. We moved him to Texas, I mean, to California. And at that point, I think when we disconnected and he was in California and I had to stay in Texas to sell our home, and it took over a year for me to sell it, I think a lot happened. He pretty much set up his life and his everything in California while I was in Texas. So when I got there, I was entering his life. It was very different. Mm. So, yeah. So I, like I said, I think this was coming. I just didn't know it was coming.
So what was your employment status at that point? Were you working? What was it for you?
At the divorce time or?
Yeah, in general, because I remember you had mentioned, yeah. you had mentioned something like, you know, you've always been an entrepreneur, but you had to take a step back during yes. the time that he had leukemia and you lost a lot of, you felt like you had lost your business acumen. I'd love to know a little bit more about that.
Oh, yes. I had finally opened a bookstore in Duncanville right before he got sick. And it was finally, after all the years of going through opening businesses and running them, and I you know, the business was debt free. It was going really well. And then he got sick. And of course, I knew that Duncanville was about an hour drive, and I knew that there was no way. So I had to close that store to mm-hmm. make sure that I could take care of him. But because of the journey of the 5 years of taking, you know, making sure he was okay, then our daughter went through a divorce, and then our grandchildren had some very bad trauma mm-hmm. Doled out from somebody. I got to where I just would wonder how I could ever support myself, because I felt like I didn't know how to do business anymore. It's like mm-hmm. it was just gone. It was just a part of me that just felt like it disconnected with all the trauma. And I knew that I had to figure out something. Mm-hmm. But when he asked for the divorce, it took 2 years for me to.
Yeah, it's feel a long, like drawn process.
Yeah, that I could do it.
Right.
So. Yeah, it was that part of me just kind of disconnected for some reason. Mm.
And then you and moved to California, sure, and then naturally, yep. like, it was a change of scenery for you. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, so, yeah, moved to California.
So yes. I wanted to ask. I remember you telling me that you know, after he brought up divorce, you didn't resist, and then you chose to move back to Texas because that's where you used to live before you moved to California. But you drove a U-Haul. Mm-hmm. And that is a very long drive. So
yes,
what, that was very daring in itself. So what was going through your mind during that move? Personally, for me, I think the hardest part was, as silly as it sounds, selling furniture, which is, I remember the first piece of, like, I sold this bookshelf on, I think, Facebook Marketplace or something. And uh-huh. these two boys came to pick it up and they looked at me and they're like, "Are you okay? It's just a bookshelf." I'm like, it's not just a bookshelf. Like, it was one of the first pieces of furniture I was selling that we both bought together from IKEA and assembled together. You know,
No.
I found like a lot of bits and bobs while packing, and it reminded me of all the good times, you know, fridge magnets, photos, trinkets. So I'm pretty sure during your move, and especially during that drive from California to Texas, a lot was going through your mind. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, to be honest with you, there's still a lot in storage that I haven't gone through. So mm-hmm. that part of my journey is still ahead of me. Mm-hmm. Well, I think my family was here in Texas. I think what I was doing was I was finding my way back to my roots so that I could feel grounded. And then, you know, I didn't know this, but 2 years after my divorce, my mom died suddenly. So the idea that I came back was very divine, because I would have never forgiven myself for not being with her. Mm. But I needed, you know, I needed my mom. I needed my sisters. So as I was coming home in the shoe haul, I was just thinking through all the years and wondering why now. And
after all this time.
Yeah. And I just knew that I just had to keep going. I mean, that was the only thing driving me, is the fact that I needed to be back in Texas around the people that love me.
Did you ever get clarity on why he wanted a divorce?
No.
It's all the same. It's same across most divorces. Yeah. Women don't know 100% unless there was infidelity, abuse, or misappropriation of marital assets. I think those are some very clear reasons. But I think in a situation like this, and so many of my friends who've been through divorce, when you ask them what happened, it takes them a few minutes to really craft an answer, to figure out, like, yeah, that's a great question. I don't really know why.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I think just accumulation of all the years and everything that we've gone through. But to come down to it after we'd gotten that far over into 36 years, getting close to 40, it didn't make a lot of sense. But, you know, the reason why is one of the things that, you know, on my account, on my Instagram account, that's something that I am going to start working on with women, because when you get into that why, that's where you get stuck. Because first of all, if you were told why, you probably wouldn't believe it totally anyway, because there's so many other things involved. And the second thing is, if he tells you why and you don't agree with it, then there you go in that circle too.
Yeah, then you're like, okay, so but why? And then why this? Yeah. And then why that? It's like you're always looking for some sort of closure.
But the closure doesn't happen like that.
It doesn't. That's it lies within you.
No. Yes. The closure happens when, and honestly, I can say this from experience, the closure happens when the day that you no longer hurt and ache when you think of him is when you've gotten your closure. Mm. And that day came for me after about 5 years.
Wow.
But 36 years is a long time. So, but it doesn't matter whether it's 6 or 36, it's still love. So closure doesn't come from him telling you why. In fact, if he had told me why, I probably would have been angry. I probably would have been mad and said, but you did this, you did that. Why is one of those things that every woman needs to let go of and move toward getting better. That I believe 100%.
Yeah. And I think it also, questioning and cross-questioning only leads to like a blame game, which makes matters worse. But I do want to talk about a few other things, which is, you know, a divorce has emotional, physical, and financial implications. How did the divorce pan out for the two of you? And what were some of the biggest implications that followed for you, especially financially?
We had a pretty amicable divorce because, you know, my grown children pretty much, you know, stepped in and said, you know, told him that he had to take care of me because, you know, I wasn't employed. Mm. I had given up everything to take care of him and my family. So they pretty much stepped in at one point when I couldn't do it emotionally. And then he is just that type of man that he didn't want me not to make it. But the implications were, I think both of us have aged a lot because of our divorce. Because
oh my
stress.
God, tell me about it.
Yes, it takes a lot of toll on not only your emotions, but your physical body feels it every inch. And anyone that said different, I don't think they were really in love. The financial implications, you know, obviously, I'm still living with one of my children. So it's not been very equitable, probably, because I should have been able to keep living alone. But I'm not destitute. I'm not struggling. I feel like that we have worked the best that we can. He continues to keep my health insurance going, which is very important. And, you know, all those little things that add up into a divorce that sometimes you don't realize that is adding up. Mm. So I think overall we've had a pretty equitable
divorce.
I don't think he, even though, you know, he does own his own home now, but I don't think he is doing like wonderful compared to mine. Mm. I think we really just both didn't win in this situation at all.
Tell me how your kids responded to this news.
It was hard. They knew, you know, they lived in it with us, obviously, all these years. They knew that we weren't very affectionate and all that through the years. I don't think it shocked them totally, but because of how it affected me, it hurt my kids pretty bad. The first year I didn't barely get out of bed. My kids were scared for me the first year. Then the second year it was better, but I lost all that time with my, I want to be careful because I do not want to cry on this.
Connie, you are allowed to feel your feelings.
I know. This losing the 2 years, when I think of it, it feels like a cocoon. And I've been writing that on my Instagram page as well. I felt like I was like in this cocoon that was very dark. And you know, the shock when you go into shock, I don't know all the medical things about physical shock, but it takes time for your body to wake up when you're in shock. You know, they say that a lot of times if you've been shot or something, you go into shock and the pain isn't as bad as it could be,
right?
Because your body's in shock. And I felt like the pain that I had to go into shock to be able to drive myself from California to Texas, to be able to just survive, to get home to my family. And they just watched all of this. My son watched me just in my chair. And at one point he wondered if I was doing drugs because I was so out of it. And it was devastating for them, but we've moved all through that and the kids are doing very well now, but it all hinged on how I did.
Yeah. I remember you had told me that your ex-husband had sort of mentioned the divorce to your middle daughter before he brought it up to you. Were you ever upset that your middle daughter did not give you a heads up? Or...
I don't, from the conversations that we've had, I don't think the conversations went that way as far as like they're just talking about it, you know, which you can kind of get in your mind that, oh, she was talking. No, I think it went that, you know, he knew that we were close and he knew that she had some good insight as to him and as to me as her parents. And I think he was confiding in someone that he trusted. Yes, I was very angry about it because I felt like she didn't need to have been involved. I didn't think our children needed to, because now my daughter, you know, I think it's affected her, because you don't ever want to be the reason or think that you're the reason that your parents divorced or didn't do it the right way. I think this should have been done between him and
between
I.
Between the two of you, yeah.
Without, yes. Okay. And the only reason I'm upset is because of how it affected her.
Your daughter.
Not about her talking to him, of course.
Yeah. What was your biggest fear transitioning into this new normal post-divorce? Did you have any insecurities you were grappling with? Anything in particular that was daunting?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, I didn't think I could do business anymore. So I was scared of how was I going to, you know, I mean, my husband's not going to, our ex-husband was not going to live forever. And he's still very much dealing with the after effects of a stem cell transplant from the leukemia. I didn't know how I was going to do it. So, you know, going through the 2 years and then coming out of that, then I spent a lot of time with my mom. And my mom was always my best friend. So she just was always there. The one thing that I never could do was puzzles growing up. I hated puzzles because I just always was so hyper. I wanted to go, 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 go. But puzzles became my
go-to,
my
thing.
Journal, your my therapy. Go-to. Yeah. I know everybody's got their own thing, but me and my mom would sit and do puzzles, and we didn't always talk a lot about what was going on, but she just always made known that she was right there for me and with me. And I think that part of my journey was the part that started taking my fears a little bit away and making me realize that somehow I'll get through this, and knowing that I could, you know, lean on my family. But just the idea that I had to do this alone, and that now I didn't know what my future looked like. Mm. It was as though one day my future was just taken away from me.
Right.
So that too was probably the biggest fear I had.
And what was it like transitioning to, like, living alone, sort of?
It was weird. It felt empty. I still feel that way sometimes. It felt empty because I had thought that we were going to be together until one of us died, you know? So the emptiness just, I guess, because I was like, I felt like maybe sometimes I was just walking around trying to figure it out, you know, I'm here alone. I don't have to answer to anybody, which some people would love that idea. And I do, you know, I do enjoy my freedom in some ways, but at the same time, I gave 2/3 of my life to him. So, I think I was just lost, you know.
Were you ever mad that you didn't bring up the divorce before he did? And if yes, how long ago do you think that you would have pulled the plug?
I wasn't mad that I didn't do it first. I would have pulled the plug in 2004.
Wow.
If I had done it when I should have done. Well, not when I should have done it, but when I felt like I needed to do it, because I was disconnecting from the marriage. But no, I was never mad. I didn't feel like it was a competition. I didn't feel slighted or... No, I can honestly say there was no anger in that at all.
What were you looking forward to before he brought up divorce?
Buying a house in California and starting and settling in California. We had just gone through so much and things were looking up. Wow. I haven't said this out loud. things were looking up. He had a great job. Our family was starting to do better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Retirement. That kind of stuff.
I'll never understand it. Yeah.
So, tell me this. Where do you think that the two of you would have been today if he had not brought up divorce?
I think we'd be together.
But
even though
how would you describe it?
What...
Do you think that if he hadn't brought it up, do you think that you would have been happy? You think that things would have improved?
I can't say that for sure, because the one thing that I will tell you is that when him and I traveled, we traveled quite a bit through our marriage, sometimes with kids, sometimes without. And we traveled quite a bit before we had kids. We were the best together when we traveled. We had wonderful times. So I can't really say that things would have gone worse, because that would have been the time that we could have been finally alone. And it may have been just the opposite. But I will never know that, and I don't know that for sure. So that's probably my biggest regret, is that he didn't give that the chance.
What were some of the hardest feelings and thoughts that you were, you know, fighting during this time of transition?
The hardest feelings and thoughts. Well, I think I kind of just said some of it. I did, in my own way, I was asking why, but I didn't ask why. It was more, what are you doing? I mean, what the heck? You know, we've already gone through the horrible times. What are you doing? And then just just being afraid of how, at 54 years old, then how do I recreate my life, and how do I look forward to a future that was always wrapped up in him? And I think I did sometimes go through my past with him and think of, you know, I would see how things played out in some ways and how maybe I could have done something better. But I try not to stay in that space
for too long.
Very long. That is not a good space to be at, other than just learning from your mistakes. So that's pretty much where I was. I didn't blame him, and I didn't. I was a little upset at some of my family because they weren't as supportive, and I felt in some ways sometimes very alone.
What about his family? Do you think that anyone from his side was giving you a hard time? Because usually what happens is, unfortunately, families, you know, they can play a really important role during a divorce, but I don't know why people start forming camps. It's not camp A and camp B. There is only one camp, and you have to be supportive whether this couple decides to part ways or not. You can't add more fuel to the fire and make it harder than it is. So do you think that from his side of the family, that there was anything negative coming at you?
There, you know, the dynamics weren't like that, no, because they even today, they still love me. We still talk to, you know, sister-in-law and brother-in-law, and his parents were dead at that point. So no, I really, no, I don't think anything like that ever came from his family.
One of the most common things after any major life event is obsessive rumination, at least for me. Did you experience that as well? And if yes, do you have any specific strategies that helped you break this toxic loop of negative thoughts and overthinking?
Well, it's not anything magic, but I will tell you, and hopefully I can maybe take just a little bit longer on this question. This is really important. Obsessive rumination is very common. It's because you, when something hits you this hard and something comes out of the blue or not out of the blue and you knew it was going to happen, of course, the first thing you do is start questioning everything. It just is. You may be going, okay, well, what did I do wrong back there? Was this where it went wrong? Did I not do this enough? And yes, I think we all have to go through those type of thoughts. But my biggest takeaway, and hopefully the listeners can take this away as well. When you start blaming yourself, and when you start continuously, why did this happen? Why are we here? What could I have done different? On and on and on. If there is no end to it, as in you guys go to counseling and you decide to get back together, is what I mean. So if your rumination doesn't have an ending that is positive like that, all you're going to do is destroy yourself, and you're not going to be able to get through until you stop doing it. Now, there are no magic answers about how to do it. It's more or less, first thing in the morning is when I found that when I would wake up, and I've heard people say when they've lost a child that they were sleeping, and then when they wake up, it all hits them again because they wake up and realize they're in their reality again. I noticed that every morning when I would wake up through the trauma stage of all this, it hit me. It was as though something was waiting for me to wake up.
Yeah.
And dump this pail of negative crap on me. And it would be everything that I felt like was ever wrong in my life.
So
now, and so, yeah.
What, like, so something comes to your mind and you start thinking about it and on and on and on. It maybe, like, for me, sometimes it, yeah, like for an hour straight. What do you practically do? What
you have to talk to yourself. You literally have to talk to yourself. You can get a journal, and as you are speaking the words, and I'm not talking in your head, I'm talking about in your car, you talk to yourself. You talk to yourself at home, and you tell yourself, you have to be kind to yourself. You have to say, okay, I screwed up here. Okay, but I'm doing this now, and I'm going to get through this. And this is not going to be the meaning of my life for the rest of my life. I'm going to, you have to, you know, people talk about affirmations, and for years I thought it was stupid, but you know what? It's real. It has to be that way, because if you don't, you're not going to get out of your head. You're going to continuously. So for instance, let me ask you a question. So let's say that you are at home tonight and you get this thought of, why did he leave me? Why, you know, and without telling any details about your situation, if you were to say, why did he leave me? Can you tell me from your experience where you are right now, would that lead to something very negative, or would you be able to pull yourself out of it?
You mean just talking about the why?
Yeah, no, just you get this thought in your head, and you're, and it doesn't even have to be the why. It's, okay, let's say you think, okay, I did this wrong. Maybe I should have been more attentive. Let's just say that's your thought that hits you tonight at 10 o'clock. How will that go? Can you paint the picture of how this is going to go once you start thinking that?
I mean, you know, if I were to dial back a few months, then, you know, I think during the course of my marriage, I was systematically programmed to believe that this is a line, I'm not even making this up, that I was 80 to 85% at fault. And we all know that that statement in itself is very entitled. For you to believe that you were only 15 to 20% at fault in a divorce is just overconfidence. I don't know.
I agree.
So for me, you know, I am in tune with my feelings, and I take cognizance of the fact that I am very reactive, but I am reactive when deprived. I am not a reactive person in general. When I was younger, I was very impulsive. So I know that my reactivity could have been, I could have handled things better. But I think my reactivity was stemming from the lack of effort to make things work And so I never got answers. I think I'm in a better position now.
That's good. I
don't have a meltdown where I question it too much. I think the way that I try to calm myself down is I literally say this one line. Sabrine, you did more than anything you could have done. You did everything to make it work. I think given my temperament, even my parents were shocked. I tried that hard. So,
well,
you know,
there you go.
Looking back, I will never have regrets about not trying hard enough. And like, Connie, when I say trying hard enough, I think I couldn't do what you did, which is you decided to walk out the door, move to Texas. I stayed in that apartment for a year in hopes of making things work. I begged. I stooped to a very low level of self-esteem. And I jokingly, you know, said to my friend once, I was the doormat for the doormat. I wasn't even the doormat. Like, you know, it was really, it was that bad. It's embarrassing. But, you know, for me, I think I wish I knew something. Even right now, sometimes I ruminate. But I think I think the way that I've reached this point is I put myself through so much pain ruminating that now my brain is just tired. It's like, not again. But I don't think that in the practical sense, I did anything to relieve myself of this pain, which I could have, which is why I asked you the question, you know?
Yeah, well, but you did. You made a point to say, and I think this is a very important part of all this. You said that you say one line to yourself, and that is exactly, I mean, you have to either talk to your support system, listen to what somebody on the outside is saying to you, find out what the good things is about yourself that you can't think of anymore. And you've got to talk to yourself. And that's, I mean, you obviously have gotten to that point and you're very strong mentally. Maybe you don't always feel that way, but you're very strong mentally to where you see, I did the best I could do. It doesn't mean that you were perfect, and it doesn't mean that we were perfect in what we did. It just means that you got in the battle and you fought. And that, regardless of whether you're at fault or not at fault, when you start ruminating, you've got to find a happy medium. Mm. And if you can't do it on your own, you've got to find somebody that can help you. You've got to find somebody that can show you what is good to help you start talking about that good. Mm. And that I live by that. I do. I live by that on this very day. I've had to do that very, very, that strategy had to be worked this morning for me because I woke up and didn't feel as good as I should have. So it happens every day for no matter how many years you've been through it.
I agree. And this is actually a perfect segue to something else, which, again, I think has been all over social media and I'm still trying to figure it out. But, you know, a lot of relationship coaches and, you know, they all say that in order to emotionally let go off of something, especially a divorce, you have to make a commitment to fall in love with yourself and learn about yourself a little bit more. Like, who are you really as a person? And what is your value system? And I've always had a very hard time understanding what does it mean to love yourself? You know, it sounds a little fluffy. And, you know, what does it take to love yourself? Any, you know, what steps are involved? Like, okay, I decide today that I want to love myself a little more. What do you do? And I think I read a very interesting book that, Connie, I think you will love. I believe it's called Welcome Home by Najwa Zabian. And she talks about how she was in a relationship and how this guy was breadcrumbing throughout. And then eventually she put her foot down. But then her need to keep going and to stay in that relationship was because she was building her home in other people. And she talks about the need to build your home within yourself, because when you build your home within yourself and you love yourself, nobody can take that away from you. When you build your home in someone else and you get divorced or you have a breakup, then they take that home with them. And then what?
Yeah.
So if you could maybe in a few one or two points kind of share What does it mean to love yourself? Like, what do you do to love yourself?
I think for me, and I think I've said some of this, is I lost myself. And what I think loving yourself means, it doesn't just mean taking care of your body, taking care of, you know, your every physical need. It's about being confident in who you are. And as a person, like I said, I was a go-getter. I should have kept who Connie really was throughout these years, because I robbed even my ex-husband of the person that he married by taking care of everybody else and forgetting yourself, that I had great needs. And I think that's the bottom line. I think loving yourself, just you take care of your needs just like you would take care of your child's needs, and not be constantly giving yourself the slight. And that's what I feel is taking care of, you know, loving yourself.
You know, Connie, I went through this big life event, and I think one of my top worries, and that of maybe a lot of other people going through heartbreak, is, will I ever find love again? Or will I be alone all my life? You know, that's like the biggest thing. And it, for women especially, depends on also when you get divorced or break up. Because age, unfortunately, is a big thing for us, especially if we want children. Has that occurred to you? I know that you're at, you know, you have grandkids, and so maybe that's not something that you are thinking about, but what is, you know, do you think about this? And if yes, what is your message to people who are worried about, you know, finding love again, especially when they're on a clock?
Well, I think the last question that you ask about loving yourself and this question, they go together. My first response would be, yes, you will find love again. I have no doubt about that. And the reason I say that is, when you've gone through this trauma, when you've gone through all of this, and you find your way through it, and you start finding out what makes you you again, you loved and you were loved because of who you were, and you are finding that person again, going through all of that loving yourself time. Now, the only thing I will say is, if you jump from one to the next, I'm not sure how it would work out. If you go from one divorce, then you're quickly going to another
relationship
without looking into why it happened, not necessarily why you broke up, but what things could you have done better? What things did you do what did you give up of yourself that you shouldn't have given up? So I'm not sure about that. If you don't take some time, I don't have a timeline. Nobody can do that. 6 months, a year, whatever. But yes, I mean, I'm 60 now, and I don't really worry about it, because I think I have a lot to give and a lot of love to give left. So anyone that does get me would be very lucky at this point. And I'm going to be very,
a little bit
egotistical there, because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a good person. I love hard and I love big. And so I think you just got to take a little time for yourself, but you will find, there's no doubt in my mind, you'll find love again. No doubt.
So the bottom line is, you know, when you get out of a relationship, really take the time to reflect. I think, funny enough, the person I was married to had just come out of a long-term relationship when he met me. And I used to always wonder, like, wow, you just broke up, though. I mean, I like you and we're doing this, but wow, I mean, you know, this was a long-term thing that you just came out of. You know, I had that question mark, but then I try not to go after it too much, because, you know, I said everyone has their own way of, but it was literally slip and slide. You know, it was one of those things where you just came out of this and you went into another thing. And I agree with you, because sometimes looking back, I wonder if It was all done in haste. And maybe the marriage became butterfly stitches on his wounds and helped him cross that bridge. But then once he crossed that bridge, you figure out like, oh, so I married because this was either a rebound or those were fleeting feelings that I thought would be permanent. And I think that you then become collateral damage in this. I'm not saying that, that's what happened in my case, but, you know, I do often think about it. So that point you made about when you get out of something, don't just get into another thing because you fear you won't find love again. You really have to take, and there is no answer to how long it'll take you to move on from something. I recently posted something on Instagram about some people are very avoidant. So they try to distract themselves. They work too much. They maybe go out for lunch or dinner, or, you know, they spend time with their friends or they play video games. I am someone who sits with my grief. And for people like me, it's just, it takes longer.
I agree.
So Connie, I also wanted to ask you, do you think you will love again? And do you crave companionship after all this time?
I would love to find that right person that is open to loving and being real, and, you know, not this, oh, you know, I'm in love type thing, and, you know, head over heels. More of a, we just need to be companions and be happy and let, you know, do the same things and enjoy each other. I would definitely be open to that. I'm not turned against that at all.
And then pivoting to your ex-husband, you know, maybe in your case, because it's been a while, it doesn't cross your mind as much. But for a lot of people, when they come out of very long-term relationships or marriages, another fear that they're preoccupied with is, what if he or she, what if they move on with someone else and I have to watch them and their life play out? This is a legitimate fear for many people, men and women. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I think that is... And that goes back to the question that you ask about monogamy and everything is, I think it's very legitimate because you love that person and you gave yourself to that person. So I think that would be natural that you would kind of fear that a little bit. And at one point I was a little bit worried about it on how it would make me feel. Now I don't care, but I think there again, you've got to get in touch with yourself. The only way I made it through all of this to this point, to where this doesn't hurt anymore, it doesn't mean I'm totally healed. It just means I don't have all the hurt, is you've got to work within yourself. You have to find out what it is that you gave up and why you gave up all that. You've got to find out why you don't trust yourself and get that back. Mm. That's number one.
So, you know, I think another thing that comes to mind in terms of fears is a lot of people assume that if you're divorced, you need to lower your standards. It happens, especially in the South Asian culture. People feel like, well, you're divorced now, it's a stigma, and like the next guy would have a lot of questions around why you're divorced. And, you know, men prefer single women even if they're divorced. It's really ridiculous. But I think the opposite happens. When you get divorced, your standards actually go really up, because you've learned through that marriage what you don't want and what you want in your life partner. What are your thoughts on this?
I think you're exactly right. I know mine have. I mean, there's no way that it's going to get past me this time, because I know that I need someone that is going to be thinking about me and my needs as well. And, you know, not this selfish way of loving the way young people do. So, yes, I think the standards are definitely higher.
Yeah.
After divorce.
And I think, Connie, this is something that comes up a lot in my therapy sessions and just even with my friends. I think initially for me, I would worship every little thing that was done for me, whether that's making eggs or giving me a glass of water. I was like, but he gave me a glass of water, but he cooked me eggs. And my friends would be like, he cooked you eggs and he got you a glass of water? Sabrine, you're romanticizing the basics. And yeah. I think yeah. a lot of us do that. I think men who were at the receiving end of divorce or not, maybe they were the ones who initiated it but didn't really want it and were disappointed, because divorce is not easy for anyone. But I think standards and, you know, romanticizing basics. And I think for me, I will really have to reconfigure my system. A lot of recalibration is required for me to understand that this list of things is really not anything extraordinary. This is stuff that you're supposed to do for your spouse. And there uh-huh. is nothing special, sparkly, diamond-jutted about this whole thing. And what's important is if this person is really showing up when shit hits the fan or when you peek at nuisance, when things are not going so well for you. Do they stick around or do they throw their hands in the air? That to me is a true test of love. My standards have gone up as well. Now, I don't know if anyone will meet those standards, but I think for women, because we find it hard to even come across men who have the very basics, that when we do get the basics, we romanticize it.
Yeah, I think that's another part of the healing, that you've got to be ready to, if you just jump back into, I don't care if you're 6 months out of your divorce, if you just jump back into it the same way that you left, I think, you know, acting like those basics are amazing. You need to be treated well. You know, I mean, I have to be treated well. Otherwise, I will live alone the rest of my life.
Mm.
And I've made that decision very clear.
And Connie, like, I wanted to ask, even before entering a relationship that could potentially lead to marriage or not, what are some of the most important questions to ask before you commit, especially to marriage? You know, any maybe 2 to 3 fundamentals to discuss in particular, life goals, compatibility, all that?
Well, I think the only thing for me, and, you know, I guess everybody would feel, I think the questions would be about our families and our children, grandchildren, whatever, on how we work together with all that. I think another thing with the compatibility is that, to me, is the biggest thing is, am I compatible with you? Do we have anything to talk about? Are we, you know, do we have some of the same goals? Do we, you know, can you care for me in that way other than just the basics? That's what I'm going to be looking for, is someone that can go beyond just bringing me a glass of water. I mean, someone that can be a true partner to me. And those, I would be asking those questions right up front, not to mention, you know, how they feel about my family and my children. Do they get along? I'm not going to disrupt my life and my family over another person, even if I feel like I love them. I'm going to make sure that the compatibility is with everything that is my life.
Mm. And I think to top that off, you know, I think it's, do you want children, financials, where do we want to live, where do we want to retire, where do we want to buy a home, what does that look like for you? Because I think those things are important. And I actually, even if this sounds a little extra, I think before you marry someone, you should go to a marriage counselor, a relationship counselor, and maybe figure out a few things about yourself, especially your love languages. Because a lot of the times what happens is people and their perception of marriage can be very different. For some people, they think that, in my case, for example, I believe that marriages are not supposed to be easy. You know, you are two people who are trying to coexist peacefully in a loving way, and you're trying to understand each other. But in order to be able to read between the lines and understand your partner's social cues, there has to be enough emotional intimacy where I'm not going to know you're allergic to peanuts unless you tell me you're allergic to peanuts. And so if I'm going to cook something that has an allergen in it, and then you have a reaction and you're not even telling me, I will continue to do it. So, you know, you have to really understand each other's communication styles. But Connie, looking back, do you have any regrets? Would you do anything differently?
Oh, yeah, I do. I think I would learn to be better at communicating my, you know, my needs and my wants, and just making sure that I, you know, did my part in that. I think I tended to not be very good at communication. Mm. So that would probably be my biggest regret. And I would learn to do it by either, you know, seeing a counselor, or both of us seeing a counselor. But other than that, you know, other than just the basic things that make us human, I think that's pretty much it.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, I think for me, I'm an over-communicator, so that is not an area I lack in at all. For me, I think being more patient and not hitting the panic button early on. I think for me, I want to be able to talk. And I think during my situation, I was so deprived of basic communication, and I was, I don't want to say, stonewalled to an extent where it was punitive, to be very honest with you. I communicated that this is very torturous for me. You being passive aggressive, and, you know, I think it frustrated me to a point where I started opening up to anyone and everyone. Think that created a lot of issues for me. So I think if I could revisit that period, I would maybe not hit the panic button that soon. I don't know if that would have done anything to save my marriage. I don't think so, because it takes more than that. You know, in general, I feel like, Connie, from what I'm hearing from even friends back home in India, where divorce rates really weren't that high, things have certainly changed across the globe in this sense. But it seems like the rate of divorce has only gone up over the years. Why do you think that is, and what do you think has changed?
Well, I mean, just I keep going back to some of the things. Just the idea of the open marriages and all the different ways of trying to change how we see marriage. And I mean, I don't think people have changed that much to where changing the institute of marriage in that it should be open, shared with someone else, all of those things. I don't think it works. I think rather than everybody trying to find new ways of making marriage work, I think it's just a matter of getting off of social media and being part of your partner's life. I think, and I may be simplifying that, but this whole everything, when I go anywhere, when I go out with my friends or with my family and we go eat or whatever, I see couples eating across from each other. And what do you think they're doing?
They're on their phones.
They're on their phones. So I'm sorry, but you can't make a marriage work on your phone. In fact, it makes it worse. But, you know, I mean, I can't say a whole lot because my marriage ended, but, you know, we did talk about things and we did have to communicate. We didn't have, you know, social media all up in our face for a long time. But I think we've just got I think our expectations are not realistic anymore about, you know, when you open a marriage up, I think that's unrealistic.
Right.
You know, I think being on your phone and never having any emotionally intimate moments, it's not going to work. Mm. We're not different as humans just because we have the phones and the social media and all that. That didn't change who we are.
Mm.
That just brought something else in the mix. That's my opinion.
Mm. And Connie, coming to, you know, women who have kids who are going through a divorce, you know, it's a very different journey because for someone mm-hmm. who doesn't have kids, you know, it's not, I don't want to say clean slate because really those chalk marks, you can't ever fully erase them.
Right.
But for women right. who have kids, they can't necessarily completely cut contact with their ex, you know, for co-parenting reason or custody reasons. How do they even start their healing journey? Because, you know, for them, out of sight, out of mind is not really an option. And co-parenting can be a real struggle.
Yeah, I think they may have to get some help in on that one. But the one person that, one lady that, you know, I got to help, she did have some issues with that when she would drop her children off. And of course, he would want to spiral into something. And, you know, it was, you just have to meet in a place where you aren't going to be vulnerable to have to listen to what he has to say. You've got to make this very compatible by, you know, if you guys tend to get in a fight when you do drop-offs, you've got to figure that out. You've got to work with either together. If you can't work together, get someone involved, get a professional involved. I didn't have to go through that. I saw several people that did. And the ones that just kept doing it and kept doing it, they didn't get any better. But I have seen, like, this one lady made some changes and took control. And now things are much better.
Mm.
But I, you know, and I know that not everybody's going to be able to get through this easy. And co-parenting was not going to be peaches and cream. I get that. But there are professionals out there that can help with all this stuff. You can get your families involved. You can get whatever the other person will allow as far as who gets involved.
To make it a little bit frictionless. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to. There are people that deal with this on a daily basis that can tell you something as simple as you need to meet somewhere different or whatever the problem is, you can do this differently. And they can give, because when you're in the midst of it, it's very hard to see everything because your emotions are so heightened and you can't think of everything like someone on the outside looking in can do. So I just say, get the help that you need if you can't do it together. And I've seen people that fought like cats and dogs in their marriage. When they got out of it, they were able to get along before the children.
Right.
So there are still people that can do that, but not everybody can. Mm. They end up hating each other and they're not going to be able to talk to each other.
Yeah, so I sort of on this topic of you helping other women, I wanted to very quickly high level talk about, are there any recurring trends in their divorce trajectories?
You know, I'm seeing a lot of abuse, not just physical. Man, it seems like. And it's not just men that are growing cold. It's everybody. But, oh, man, they just seem, it just seems like that they're, the men are just getting tired of the, I don't know, the responsibility, the whatever, nagging. I don't know what all the issues are, but they just seem to be wanting to just ditch and go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening a lot, and I'm hearing people, thousands over the last 2 months, women have messaged me and they get left with barely anything. They leave them and they go for either that younger person or they go just for another person. Mm-hmm. And they're leaving them with their children. And that's the trend I'm seeing, and it's horrible.
Right. I mean, I think I have noticed a very similar trend on support groups. I think as part of my process where I solicit, you know, stories of perseverance and resilience, I think this topic has been a huge one. So I am part of support groups where I think I'm seeing a very similar trend that after 25 years of marriage, just decides to leave a note on the fridge.
Pretty much.
It is. Something's happening. Something's going on. It's very strange. It just feels like it's happening from within the earth. I don't know if like it's like a magnetic thing or what.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like one of those weird things when you notice a lot of crows and you're like, what's going on? Like, that's a lot of crows.
When you get these people, when you get on the internet, I think has a huge play, because I'm going back to that monogamy. When you get these people talking on the internet about how cool it is to have that open marriage, and then you get to go have sex with other people, I'm sorry. I am so sorry, but that is messed up. Whoever's listening to this and you're doing it, you know, don't throw tomatoes at the person talking about it. Just give me a break, because I'm just looking at, as a woman and my emotional stability, thinking of my husband going with another woman, and even if I'm going with another man, there's gonna be a time where there's jealousy. And so I think that when you're giving into all of this and you're rewriting what marriage should be, I think this is where our problem is. Mm-hmm. And I know there are lots of ways to say that scientifically and from a doctor's standpoint, but bottom line is we've got to quit messing with it and thinking that all this experimenting is okay.
I think it also stems from some people genuinely have a sex addiction. They really do.
I
think
they talk their wives into it so that they can justify it. Yes.
Right. And I think I am really sorry to any listeners who believe in this and who, like, I understand that there is a whole narrative that, why are you so judgmental? I think I am a little bit in this area. And I think I understand open relationships. I don't understand open marriages. Marriage equals monogamy. And I think you make it a lot harder for other people like us to be in happy, normal, healthy marriages that don't operate with twisted rules. So I agree with you on that, Connie. I wanted to get your thoughts on something else. I remember you had mentioned to me that you have been working with a woman with women who have been divorced for 10 to 15 years, but they are still as miserable as they were on the day of their divorce, even after so much time has passed. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think probably the number one thing, based upon the women that are in my head that I'm thinking about, their support system is pretty much not there. Mm. Secondly, based upon how bad the marriage was, the abuse, the neglect, the talking down to them, the breaking down of her as a person, if she's not got a good support system and is not able to really go and grab onto that for one reason or the other, I think she's broken to a point to where maybe she's not able to, not that she's not strong or any different than we are. I just think the dynamics are different. Everything that has happened up to the point that she's divorced, what may be happening now, is he bullying her? Is there still problems that we don't see? Do they have no one to turn to? Did they isolate themselves? There is so much involved. I can't even tell you how deep we have gone into this rabbit hole with me and women as we talk about what's going on with them. Some things that I would never even have imagined myself that you could get yourself into. And I really don't want to talk about that stuff. Sure. I will be doing some of that in my subscription, because I'm going to be a lot more raw in a more safe zone. So I do want to talk about some of that eventually, because there are so many people that probably are listening to this right now that are going through some things that you and I would never even
imagine. Right.
And my heart goes out to them. And that's why I'm trying to scream as loud as I can on my, and I love what you're doing more than you can know, because you can probably go wide, wide, wide with what you're doing, because women need to have the permission to talk to somebody, even if it's on the internet and they don't know them. They need to, if they like what I say, then they need to be able to message me and tell me and engage and see if they can trust me enough to, you know, talk about it. Or you, when, you know, once you've got this out and you give people permission to talk about their divorce, that they feel like they can contact you and find a way to get through this. Because in my opinion, after 10 or 15 years, if they've made no progress, I'm afraid that
something's broken and something needs to be, that the approach has to change. And I agree with you. Are there any major don'ts after a divorce?
Say that again one more time. I'm sorry.
Is there anything you absolutely shouldn't do after a divorce?
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that. The one thing I would say is don't jump again. I say don't jump into another marriage until you know you're ready. That would be the only thing I can think of. Maybe you could think of something different, but jumping into another marriage is like you're just signing that divorce paper again.
Yeah.
So I just say don't do it.
I think from my perspective, you know, mutual friends can it can be a little complex with mutual friends. So you know, I think, like I mentioned to you earlier, Connie, it's really like toxic camps emerge out of a divorce or a relationship ending in general. And I think that there are categories of mutual friends, and you can tell right away that some mutual friends really aren't your friends. They're more of their friends. And then there are some mutual friends who are grieving the divorce with you. And, you know, so if you're going to lean on anyone from the mutual pool, you have to be a little intentional about who that is. I think for me, I had to block out a lot of people who didn't necessarily do anything wrong to me, but they were related to someone who did. And I think their posts and stories, it not that they had anything to do with what I was going through, but it was a bitter reminder of this person who had a very negative role to play in my life. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that some people must have taken offense to that. But, you know, it's not my job to justify the why. And maybe somewhere down the line, they will understand that. So I think you have to be a little careful with that, mutual friends. And in a divorce, I think it shouldn't come to anyone as a surprise. But the very people who you became friends with through your husband or wife, you may think that, wow, they really like me and we are friends now, even though I met them through my spouse. But wait for when things end and watch your follower count drop, because people you've been incredibly amazing to and have never had an issue with, even if you met them through your spouse, watch them unfollow you and block you. And so, you know, you have to be a little careful about that. But anyway, this is like a topic that we could maybe go on and on about. I do want to talk. I want to pivot to something completely different now, which I think this is the marketer side of me kicking in, which is your brand and your rise to fame on Instagram. You know, what led to your follower growth? How have you continued to grow your community? And are there any main strategies that have worked for you?
I think just staying consistent with talking about the same thing, even though I've had people ask me, are you ever going to stop talking about trauma and divorce? And the answer is no, I'm not, because that is where I think I can help the most. I think it's a matter of being consistent. I've been doing it for a little over 2 years now, and posting the reels, trying to connect with people, opening up and being vulnerable in where I've come from, and not being afraid to speak the truth, because people, they can find the bull crap. They see it real well nowadays. So when you're talking about experience, you've got to really be raw. You can hold back the things that you don't want anyone to know, of course, but I think that's pretty much it. I've just tried to be open, and when they message me, I try to always get back to people. I want to just be the best I can be at showing them a better way of not getting through the same trauma that I went through, and maybe making some better choices. I'm not a therapist. That is not something that I have done, but I just share my journey. And I think that really is what's making people connect better with different accounts, is they feel like they can trust them. They trust that they're telling them the truth.
Mm. So, Connie, in terms of growth strategies, do you think that there is anything in particular that has helped you grow your community?
Well, I think this last growth strategy, I think, is just a godsend, because, I mean, finally, I think it just kicked in with all the consistency and all the, people are finally finding me, and they're talking to each other in my account on the comments. So I think just seeing that when they come on my account and they see all of the posts, because there's 400 or 500 reels and posts, they're able to go back and look at what I posted, and they can see the trend and what I'm all about. And it's not a new account, and it's just, I'm not sure that there's anything that I did to get the massive growth lately, other than giving them a lot to binge on. And then when they go away from binging on my account, they know this is what she's wanting, this is what she's doing, this is what she's willing to do, I can turn to her, I can whatever. And I think that really is the strategy, is just staying with it. Stick with the same message.
Right. Have a unique selling proposition. And then also, I think reels are a huge piece of the mix. I think you've been very consistent in publishing reels and video content. How has your family reacted to your content going viral on Instagram? Any reactions? And any reactions from your ex-husband?
No. I mean, they say, way to go, Mom. I think they just see it as, this is who I am. I did this as a teenager. I've always tried to do good with my businesses and connect with people. And I think they just see it as an extension of who Mom is.
That is very cool. So, I think I would be very proud of my grandmother if she went viral on Instagram. I think that's so cool.
My granddaughter, actually, that's funny that you say that, because today she actually did say, she's 16, she said, I'm so proud of you. Aww. So I think they're proud of me, even though it really isn't about me. It's just, you know, just getting out there and letting people know that there's a better way.
Yeah.
And I think that's all it is.
And but no reaction from your ex-husband?
No, no. I mean, he just knows that I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
And, yeah.
You know, and I try not to show him in a bad light.
I mean,
it's obvious that he stuck with me 36 years where, you know, there's something good about him. So I don't try to bad mouth him and badger him. I just want people to know how to deal with it as they're going through it.
Right. But are you in touch with him? Do you talk?
We talk for basic family reasons and over our children, over our grandchildren. We don't have a friend relationship anymore. No.
In hindsight, do you think that the divorce happened for the best? Or do you think that things would have been better if you stayed together?
Well, and like I said earlier, maybe we would have been okay had we given ourselves the chance to finally be alone with, you know, no kids. And, you know, that may have been good. But for me, it's been best because I am finding me again. And I remember why I love life so much. And I had forgotten all that.
Yeah. I mean, a divorce really is, so many people will say this out loud, that a divorce is like a death. But I think only worse in the sense that if you're at the receiving end of it, it's like you're grieving someone who's dead, but really not dead.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Not to say that death, losing your spouse in the real sense of like, if they pass away is better, but this is just, I don't know, a different kind of... I think for me, I've never experienced loss like that before.
So I
have nothing to compare it with. But yeah, Connie, what are your hopes for the future? Any big goals for yourself and your brand?
Yes, definitely. My number, I think, obviously my family comes first and my grandchildren. But I think what goes with that is the legacy that I leave for them. I want to go as big and wide and with this brand as I can to tell as many people that there's a better way, and, you know, not hating each other and all of the things that these beautiful women are going through and being told that they're worth nothing. And I just want that from, if I could just get on the rooftop and scream it, that's what I want to do. And if Instagram and TikTok and all the platforms is the way to do it, I just pray that I can continue to push day by day and build the brand in a way that will touch people and help them through this. Hard time.
Do you think that your divorce has changed you at a cellular level? And if yes, how?
I think it's continuing to do that. I think at first, no. Mm. I think it was more about trying to get through how the hurt and the pain felt. But I have noticed over the last couple of years, especially starting this Instagram and the brand, I think that's what's happening now, is because I want to be the best I can be. I want to learn more about what makes me tick and how I can, you know, be the best of myself, not just outward, but just be the best in my thinking and every part of my life. So yes, I think it's doing that actually. At this moment,
I'm pivoting a little bit here because something just crossed my mind out of curiosity. Do you remember any words from your vows?
Wow.
This is a challenging one.
Yeah,
and so random.
And, you know, I don't, other than you know, we did promise each other and we talked about that and how we wanted to live our life out together. I don't remember the exact words, no. And I wished I could have found them, but
maybe,
I don't know if
maybe it's for the best.
Maybe it's for the best. I probably don't need to revisit that. That could open the wound a little bit, possibly.
What is your top advice? Like, what is your one piece of advice to couples who are trying to make it work, who are on the brink of divorce, but trying to make it work?
Keep trying. Keep working hard at getting the help that you need. Don't do it alone because there's too many emotions, and I've said this already. Work very hard at not speaking ugly to each other, not blaming each other, and just practice some forgiveness, or I'm not sure it will work. And I think the number one thing is just to get the help that you need and take some time out for yourself, for you as a couple, because otherwise it's not going to work. The kids are very hard on a marriage.
And I think the only thing I would add to that is when you're trying to work on it, please make sure that you both have the same agenda, that you're not just doing it as a check mark. If you're going into therapy, be present. And, you know, it is a lot of work, but I think divorce is not a matter of convenience anyway. If you're divorcing, if you think that there is hope, but you feel like you're not motivated to put in the time and the energy, I think that is just, that's an embarrassment. I mean, really, you go through all this trouble, unite two families, and then you know there is hope, but you're not going to make it work because you know that it's going to be a lot of work. So when you are doing that, when you're trying to make it work, show up and give your 100% to it. Don't just come in for the attendance.
I agree. Yeah. If you're already done, then don't drag her through it or drag him through it. If you're done, take care of it. If you really do want to make it work, I agree with you. Make sure that you are giving it everything and being fair to that other person. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Connie, we've actually reached the end of this episode. I know. But before we wrap up, what advice do you have for women who are currently going through divorce? You know, how can they transition into this new normal better? What can they do on days when they feel that they can't do anymore? Because we all have those, especially those who are in the receiving end of the divorce.
I would say first and foremost, be kind to yourself. That's the biggest thing. Don't beat yourself up each and every day. Find a huge support system, whether it be family, friends, people that you know you can trust, not that is supposed to be there for you, but the ones you know you can trust. Find that person or people and lean on them and ask them, can I lean on you? Will you be there to help me? And therapy, you know, if you feel that you can do that. Probably the next thing would be find when you have those bad days, which you will, find accounts like mine, like Sabrine's, like there's lots of beautiful accounts on Instagram and the other platforms. Find someone that you can connect with, that you can, at a given moment at 3 a.m. in the morning, that you can shoot them a message and that you know eventually they'll talk to you back and give you some advice other than just, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I would never have believed that I would say that about connecting with an account, but nowadays it's the new normal, and I'm seeing accounts that I work with closely and they are enriching my life in such big ways. And your podcast is one of them, being able to connect as people and become friends, and then just seeing what each other, what we do for the community of people, these women that are going through these hard times and feel very alone need somebody that knows how they're feeling, not just someone telling them how they're feeling, but knows what that deep, dark hurt feels like. Message them. And if they're willing to talk to you and they open themselves up to that, hold on to it like it's a life raft. And that's the honest truth. Just hold on for dear life, because you will start seeing some light at the end of the tunnel mm-hmm. every time you see that person post a reel that hits that pain point that you've got today, or they give you this aha moment of, oh, that's why I'm feeling this way. Or, you know, you hear your podcast of someone that has gone through deep, dark stuff, and they're finally getting there. So that would be my advice. Hold on and make sure you hold on to the right people.
Mm-hmm. Connie, thank you so much for taking the time to join me. I'm beyond grateful. And, you know, I really admire your strength, resilience, but most importantly, your positive attitude. You know, you don't make divorce look like something morbid and sad. I think you've made it look like, well, this is something that I went through, but this is not something that defines me. And I'm so sure that many people will derive strength from your experience. I know I did. And it'll help them not just live life, but also thrive in their lives. You know, divorce is a life event, yes, but it doesn't have to be this dark stamp on your entire life. And were you saying something? Sorry.
No, I just said I agree with that.
Yeah.
Totally about the identity. Yes.
And I would also like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. Stick with us, because there are many, many more beautiful and unbelievable stories of perseverance and resilience in store for you. I will see you all very soon. Till then, keep your chin up.
To the woman who is standing in front of the mirror, broken, devastated, and numb, if I could give you anything in this world right now, I would give you my courage. Even though you might feel that peace, a mended heart, or even the answer to the question why would be a better gift from me, I assure you, it is not. If I give you my courage, then you will fight until you find the answers you need to heal, and you will dig deep within yourself to become the beautiful person you always have been, but may have just gotten lost due to trauma. So I offer you my courage to find the strength each day to wake up to all of the possibilities and remember how worthy you are to love, to laugh, and to be loved just as you are today. I'm sending you all my love and courage, my beautiful friends. Yeah.